friends and neighbors, we are back.
Yes.
In the earballs, we are here for another scrumptious edition of My Thai Happy Hour.
We really do make delicious episodes of the show, George.
I do. We do. I mean, we do our best. I mean, it's like little nuggets of love spread across 1 hour. And speaking of nuggets of love, God, my stomach is killing me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I got the COVID shot. I got shot number one today.
And, oh, boy.
And immediately had to do diarrhea. So hopefully it's not a side effect. You know, they do that thing where, like, I don't know if anybody's really talked about it. I didn't know about it until today. But after you get the shot, you have to wait for 15 minutes.
What do you have to poop?
Yeah, and it's like, they're like, well, we need to see if you, like, die or something. God knows we don't want down the Garden State Parkway. We need to see if you have any bad side effects while you're still in the Rite Aid. And I'm like, but I got to poop. And I know if the poop was a side effect or just the fact that I was like, I need to get in the car and get home and poop. But here we are. I pooped. Don't know if it's a side effect or not. But if it is, a minor one. The also thing, they don't tell you, it's like getting shot in the arm. It's not like a flu shot. That thing fucking goes deep.
You know what I feel like when I got mine? It was so sore, but it was so deeply sore. It was like, man, maybe they did put a Bill Gates tracker chip in below my skin.
You know, I got one of those RFID chips. I told Uncle Pete that one time. I'm like, I got one of those RFID chips, and he freaked out.
He's like, make you leave his property immediately?
Like, he's like, oh my God. He's like, that's why there's the chemtrails over the house this week. And I'm like, okay, Uncle Pete, that's why we only visit you once every couple of years, and you live in the double wide in New Hampshire. Not there's anything wrong with that, but there is when you have to poop in a bucket. Anywho, what are we going to talk about this week?
So this week we have an awesome show, yet another Frank Grillo movie. Who knows? He's making a lot of movies these days, and we're watching them. Boss Level, we just saw it, and we're going to talk about it. George watched Behind Her Eyes. We both listened to the brand new Down by Law record. Yes, you heard me right, folks. In the year 2021, there's a new Down by Law record, and we listened to it. We've definitely got some thoughts. And then finally, George played a video game called Control Ultimate Edition, and he's definitely got some thoughts.
Yeah, I have lots of thoughts. I have more thoughts about, I have no idea. Like, I had no idea who Frank Grillo was. Is that weird?
No, I mean, he is like a background actor in a lot of these movies, and now he's a star, or, you know, at that level of star.
He reminds me of like Shane from Walking Dead / Punisher. I mean, that's who I always thought he was. And I think I actually thought he was him for a while. He plays like your like everyman type of like, I will beat you up, but I'm not Batista big. So I kind of just play like the like, I am the asshole sidekick. And now
he is the asshole sidekick.
And he's starring in movies. I mean, last week we saw him in a terrible movie. The Cosmic Sin. This week, not so much of a terrible movie. He stars in Boss Level. I will say, though, I probably thought like Frank Grillo was the worst part of this movie. Like, I think I liked the story and I liked the plot. I got to say something. I think I've said in the past, because we've seen a few of these movies recently. This has been a gimmick that's happening quite a lot. We called, obviously, the Groundhog Day movie.
Yep.
And it was originally made popular by Bill Murray back in the 90s in a movie where he basically woke up every day and had to relive the same day over and over again. Recently, we saw that one movie where the girl was experiencing it. It was kind of like a horror movie. I forgot what it was called, but I think
Happy Death Day.
Okay. So Happy Death Day, yes, there's a sequel to that. But there
Happy
was
Death Day too.
But there was another one like a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Russian Doll?
No. That was it too. Okay, so I don't even need to go there. There's so many recently. There's also that big sci-fi movie that came out with the dude from, with Charlie, the guy from Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, yeah. Dude, there's so many.
There's so many. Now. It's become a thing in the last like 5 years. Everybody does Groundhog Day. To be very honest, I hated Groundhog Day.
Well, in fairness, a Groundhog Day situation is a lot easier to explain and also a lot less things to trip over than a traditional time travel movie. Because if it's just one day over and over again, you're not like trying to fill the plot hole being like, but wait a second, when he goes back in time, wouldn't this and this and this just, no, his alarm clock goes off again. Just go with it. Hey, before we get into the actual review of Boss Level, why don't I teach you how to make a cocktail real quick?
Oh shit, I forgot about cocktails. You're supposed to say, how come you hate Groundhog's Day? But instead, I will take a cocktail. I can't believe I forgot it again.
So you know, I try to make topical cocktails about the episodes that we're in. And, you know, any kind of cocktail that has like a boss level or something in it, we've kind of done similar things to it. So I'm like, you know what? New Down by Law record. I bet there's like a law cocktail. There's not as many law cocktails as you would think. And some of them are just terrible. So this is the only one that I felt like was appetizing. It's called Federal Law. And so this is a drink recipe from Cocktail Builder. It is an ounce and a half of Absolut Courant vodka, which is grape flavored. An ounce and a half of sweet and sour mix, 4 ounces of cranberry juice, 1.5 ounces of Chambord raspberry liqueur, or razzmatazz for everybody else. And what you're going to do is you're going to fill a short glass with ice cubes. You're going to add the vodka, Chambord raspberry, sour mix, and cranberry juice. This is a stirring cocktail, not a sipping cocktail. But when you're done stirring it, you're going to add a splash of tonic water, give it a quick little stir again, and garnish as desired and serve it. It turns into like this wicked green color, Federal Law.
Did you do that for St. Patrick's Day?
I didn't do it for St. Patrick's Day because I honestly, you know, since I quit drinking, I kind of forgot it was St. Patrick's Day. I did that because, you know, law, Down by Law, it was the closest I could come for rock and roll. But yes, it's also green, and we're recording this the night before St. Patrick's Day. Huzzah. Everyone call an Uber or drink at home.
Yeah, if they were, they're not doing St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, but if there was, it would be the biggest super spreader event of all time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's be real. A day like St. Patrick's Day is a super spreader event anyway. Whatever kind of germs or like grossness that you may have out, you know, cold, anything. There's a lot of people yelling at the top of their lungs and spitting and smooching and pooking and puking and all the fluids are coming out of you. It's St. Patrick's Day, man. It gets weird. So, yeah, maybe, you know, 2 years without like a St. Patrick's Day party might be helpful.
Yeah. So back to where we were. Ask me the question.
Why do you hate Groundhog's Day?
I love Bill Murray. I really do. But like Groundhog's Day, just at the time, I felt it was just a bad gimmick. And I don't like movies that don't progress quickly into new set pieces, into new areas. I hate movies that take place in one room, like with the exception of maybe Saw, because Saw was so different when it came out. I was okay with that, but I'm like, you know, I recently saw Locke, which is like takes place in a car. The whole movie takes place in a car. I can't do that. I can't. My head can't wrap itself around movies like that. But I also felt that I just felt with this movie, it was like the same thing over and over again. I know that's the gimmick, but it also bores me. And I just didn't love Groundhog's Day. I know a lot of people love it. I did not love it, but I have grown more and more appreciative of the so-called gimmick as more and more movies have come out like it. I did enjoy Russian Doll. I completely forgot about Russian Doll. That was such a good TV show.
Don't know. That was in the before times, man.
Yeah, that was before. That was like 4 years ago now, 3 years ago. And I also, wow. I also really, really enjoyed that movie that I'll never remember what exactly it was, but it was that girl who like, basically she found like, maybe it's like one of those horror movies that you didn't watch and I did, but it was a girl who was repeating the same thing over and over again. And then she found someone else also repeating the same thing over and over again in the over and over again world. Really, really good movie. As soon as I figure out what it is, I will let everybody know. It probably will be on Twitter and not on this show. But this one, so we're talking about right now, what is it, Final Boss Level? Final Boss? Help me out.
Boss Level.
Boss Level. It should have been called Final Boss Level. But regardless, this is a movie that plays like a video game. But it's like, I guess they go more for, rather than you're just repeating your day again, because you're not. You're not waking up and it's the same day again. This is more of the, you die, you come back to life again that morning. And it feels like you're replaying a really tough level in a video game. I, however, really enjoyed the fact that there was a point you had to get to. He knew he needed to solve the problem. He needed to.
Oh, Palm Springs.
Palm Springs. That's what it was. That was it, right? Palm Springs.
It was on Hulu. It was excellent with Andy Samberg.
Did you start understanding what I was saying and you went and found it, or did you just like pop in your brain because you're so smart?
It popped in my brain. It took a little while to get there.
That was really good. I don't even know if we talked about that much.
We actually reviewed it like a billion episodes ago.
So good. I think you saw it first and I went back. Sometimes one of us reviews something on the show that the other person hasn't watched and we're so enticed by the review, we go watch it. That was definitely the case with Palm Springs.
Huzzah.
But in this case, it's Frank Grillo is like, he is so a paint-by-numbers actor that was not even like... Acting is what it is on this. In this case, it's really his quest, and that's where it's like, oh, this is like Max Payne, the video game. And I enjoyed it. The bad guy is Mel Gibson. I found him to be, you know, it's Mel Gibson. You get what you get. I just finished watching Tangent to the Side. I just finished watching the, and this is not something we would review on the show, but we watched the Woody Allen documentary on HBO, which is obviously very disturbing because, you know, it's about his, you know, it's his daughter who he, you know, molested. And, you know, he's still a big famous director. Mel Gibson didn't quite hit those levels of depravity. We kind of give him a slight pass. He did apologize, whatever. Mel Gibson's in this movie, so I guess that's just a, what is it, trigger alert? Yeah, we're trigger alerting Mel Gibson. But
well, the thing with Mel Gibson was is he got wasted. He went on this like really nasty anti-Semitic rant. And then I forget what else he said because, you know, that was like, you know, in Hollywood years or like dog years, you know, the controversies go. It's like you don't even know when it is anymore. Like, because I actually forgot about Mel Gibson like completely up until like he started popping up in movies lately. And he does like the same thing. Like ever since he like fell from grace and like, you know, went on his rant and he got blacklisted for a little bit. He actually just plays the same character in every movie that he's in where he's like, I'm not going to shave my beard. I'm just going to be like grumpy. And they're like, okay, Mel, you were in Lethal Weapon once, so we're going to give you a bunch of money and just show up and be a grump. And like anything that I've seen him in the past bunch of years, and I can't, and like this is like how long ago it was. I can't even remember if he melted down and showed his ass before or after The Passion of the Christ. I want to say it was after The Passion of the Christ where everyone was like, oh my God, Mel Gibson can do no wrong. He directed like this great movie. And we all know how it ends, guys. I never watched it.
I feel like it was during Passion of the Christ. Like, I feel like all this kind of like, that was the giant convergence of like his madness. It may have been like, he may have just done the drunken tirade on his child at that point. But, you know,
I don't know if he did it on his child. I think that was David Hasselhoff who went on the drunk.
Oh, you're right. With the sandwich. Was that David Hasselhoff?
With the sandwich. That was David Hasselhoff. Yeah.
It's very similar. Very similar people here.
Some people were just showing their asses and, you know, but he was gone for a while. And then like, you know, he did some movie and everyone's like, oh, it's Mel Gibson's comeback. And everyone's like, yeah, no one gives a shit about Mel Gibson anymore. Fuck off to the rental bin. And then like, you know, ever since then, it's just same guy. He's like, I'm a grumpy guy and I got a grumpy guy beard. And like, I was in Lethal Weapon once. And like, that's Mel Gibson, like every movie
So he plays that here. I mean, he is technically the final boss, but to get there though, I enjoyed it because I felt like every single person he had to get past to get to where he needed to get to Mel Gibson had some fun, like, and I want to use the word gimmick again, but they had like, they were like a ninja or they were some guy who would kill a person by harpooning them. Or it was just like these outlandish, very John Wick-ish. Like, you know, the when they hired a whole bunch of bounty hunters to get John Wick in 2 or 3, I don't know at this point.
Yeah, they all had a gimmick.
Yeah, they all had a gimmick. And here they do too. And it's very Kill Bill-esque. I enjoyed it a lot.
You want to know like how bad Mel Gibson fucked up to the point where like people like were just like not having it. And then like Fox made a Lethal Weapon TV series a few years back and had had Damon Wayans in it and it had Marlon Wayans. It's Damon Wayans. It had Damon Wayans in it and it had like another dude and they were playing Murtaugh and Riggs, the beloved cop from the Lethal Weapon series. And then like the dude who played the Mel Gibson part was like such an asshole to everyone on set that they're like, you know what? We don't even have to worry about keeping Martin Riggs alive in the Lethal Weapon series. They just killed him off because it's like, fuck it, man. Fuck Mel Gibson. We're killing Martin Riggs off in this TV series because like, you know, the characters he played and where he was so toxic at that point. And that was only a few years back. But then, you know, he came back with, I'm a grumpy guy. I'm a grumpy beard. And I'm going to play these roles. And I'm going to talk like this and just be like, I'm a grumpy guy.
What's,
you know?
What's really interesting is The Passion of the Christ isn't listed on his IMDb. I wonder if he like didn't take a credit for it or something. That's very strange.
Or if it might not be listed at that point. You have to, IMDb, they updated their app recently and it kind of annoys me because you have to scroll back to see certain things. And he was like the director and the writer on that, I think. So it would probably be further back in his IMDb.
Yeah. So it's possible I like this movie a lot more because about halfway through the movie, Frank Grillo plays this like He's like ex-Marine, CIA, special forces guy who, you know, would rather be doing that than being with his family. And his, I guess, ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, mother of his child, is a scientist who works for Mel Gibson, and she has created some machine. So there is actually, they do explain why this is happening. There is a machine that creates, basically rewinds time, and he's the one who's caught in this. But it's also largely a story that's, again, very, you know, I'm a dad now, so I have feels for stuff like this. You know, it's very much about him trying to bond with his child. So after he figures out how to get from point A to point B and not dying from the hitmen, he's like, oh, now I'll take timeouts and go spend more time with my son now that I can relive my day over and over again. Don't try to figure out the math here, people. But it gets really touching. And then he falls for his son. And then his son, you know, goes through things, and then he has to save him. And I'm not going to ruin any, spoil anything, but it is a very, it's kind of heartwarming amongst the gore.
It really is. It's not a bad movie. It's not a bad movie at all. I mean, there's some monologues in there that'll, they'll make you work for it a little bit, but it's not a bad movie at all. There is like a lot of really like nice heartfelt moments in it where like you do get to see like this dude relive his life and kind of try to get anything he possibly can right before he knows he ultimately has to die, whilst also getting revenge on anyone who crossed him across his path. And one of the things I did like about it is that like once he does kind of figure out some stuff, like you get to see him like have some fun killing the people who killed him multiple times, which I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah, it was one of the better versions of this Groundhog Day thing that I've seen in recent years. I really did like Palm Springs though. And I don't know, it was a good hour and a half and I enjoyed it. You know how I talked about sometimes I need brain dead stuff. Usually on Friday, I'm fried. By Fridays, I am so messed up at night. I'm either in bed by 10 or I'm watching a movie that will just deplete whatever brain cells I have left. You know, in past weeks, it's been Batman versus Superman. This week I went for this, but I was like, oh, this is like really good. Like I'm paying attention and I'm enjoying this. And I feel like sometimes you just need that. It's action packed. It's bloody. It's gory. You know, it is definitely a very much an action thriller. And, you know, I like where it gets to. I think the very ending, the way they solved the situation was a little bit strange. I don't think I quite understood how they got there, but whatever. I didn't mind too much, so I'm not going to complain as much. Did you get it? Did you quite understand how they got to the end?
Yeah, I understood how they got to the end. And you know what? I will say it didn't feel sandwiched in because it, you know, the thing that happens with these Groundhog Day-esque movies is at the core of it, there's always somewhat of a mystery that the main character needs to solve to figure out a way to not only just undo what is happening to them, but also kind of like figure out a way to be like, okay, why is this happening? How did this happen? And that's how it's going to help me get out of it. And I thought that where they ended up with it and how they got there was actually pretty clever. And I was pretty stoked on it. I actually really enjoyed this movie. You know, I thought it was a fun little action movie. Also, like you, I watched it on a Friday night as well. And I'm like, all right, this is a great way to kill a Friday night and, you know, wait for all the new releases to finally hit HBO Max.
Do you know what my favorite gimmick has been in a movie in recent years?
What's that?
It follows. Like, the fact that, like, if you fuck somebody, the evil will follow them. So you just have to keep fucking people. Like, the fuck has to pass on. Like, that is the most insane gimmick for, like, you know, passing on, getting from point A to point B that exists in recent movies.
So it's basically just HPV, the movie.
Yeah, but yeah, 100%. Well, AIDS, the movie. Though I think that was called Rent.
George. Wow.
I mean, seriously. But yeah, It Follows was like, you need to have sex with someone, and if you have sex with them, the evil will follow. The problem with It Follows was is if you the evil kills the person that's first in line, it will then still go back after that. It just slows you down. Like, and the thing doesn't stop following you, even though I started thinking about, like, what if you, like, just traveled to France or something? And, like, is it just in America? Can it go on water? And I didn't quite explain that, but I really enjoyed It Follows. If anybody has not watched that, that is a really good modern horror movie. But speaking of modern twist on things, I would not have reviewed this TV show for this show. I did not even tell you to watch it because I'm like, this is like, you know, a, I thought it was going to be like a psychodrama type thing. Talk about Behind Her Eyes. It just, it was out on Netflix. Our friend Matt Giaquinto recommended I watch it because people were talking about it. I really thought it was like that Nicole Kidman, Hugh Grant movie that came, the TV show that was out a few weeks ago, a few months ago. I thought it was going to be like, yeah, like high tension, whodunit stuff, but not necessarily my Thai happy hour material. But no, this show turns like halfway through, goes full sci-fi. And I'm like, this is so strange. It stars Simona Brown, and she is best known for nothing you've ever heard of, unless you like Kiss Me First or Night Manager. I don't know what else she's been in. But regardless, she is this lady who supposedly has, you know, no acquaintance with these other people, this family, this dysfunctional family. She is a secretary. She's starting a job. There's a new doctor coming, and she accidentally, none of this is really spoiling anything, it's the first episode, she meets the said doctor, her boss, not knowing it's her boss, the night before at a bar. He tries to pick her up while drunk, and right before they're about to seal the deal, he realizes he's married, and he's like, I can't do this. And she's like, oh, it's okay, I get it, I get it. And like they part ways, and the next day, oh, you're actually my new boss, I had no idea. So I'm like, oh my God, this is so bad, why am I watching this? Like, this is so not the type of show I want to, like, is she, it's gonna be like, you know, I don't know, I just saw where it could go, and I'm not a fan of those type of movie, those, like,
yeah, HR Nightmare, the TV show,
yeah it's like thriller drama romantic stuff. I was like, but I'm gonna keep watching it, it's kind of hooking me along, it's only six episodes. So we find out very quickly his wife is Eve Hewson. She is Bono's daughter.
Really?
Yeah, like the Bono. She plays Adele in here. I had no idea. She's really good in it. I was like, who is she? And I looked her up, and she's like, Bono's daughter. And she has been in Blood Ties and Bridge of Spies. She was in Robin Hood, the more recent one. I'd never seen her before this, but she's plays the wife, who then accidentally bumps into this lady too and becomes best friends with her. Oh my God, this is so weird. Like, she almost slept with her boss, and then she also ran to his wife, and now they're friends. Everybody's friends. It's so weird. And then very soon afterwards, she starts fucking her boss, and then she's still best friends with his wife. And I'm just like, oh, I don't like these. This is like Sex in the City. Why am I watching this? But it keeps sucking me in, and I keep watching this, and it, like, I'm like, we find out there's this backstory. It's the backstory that kept me going. The wife was in a mental institution. She had a friend there. I think it was like a rehab mental institution. This is a British show, so maybe things are a little different over there. But she keeps talking about this fire that killed her family in this castle she owns. And basically the doctor saved her, and that's why she fell in love with him. Like, the backstory was like sucking me in. I'm like, all right, these flashbacks are keeping me following this weird romantic drama. What do you call that?
Romedy?
Well, that's comedy, though. It's like, I don't know, whatever. But I'm like,
drama.
And then, like, by episode 3 or 4, we find out, I might be spoiling a little here as a spoiler alert, but not really. We find out that, like, the wife can actually see shit. Like, she can, like, do out-of-body experiences and, like, find stuff. And she, like, is manipulating people, like, pawns on a chessboard with her weird, like, sci-fi out of body shit, and it goes like full sci-fi. You find out there might be like dead bodies in wells, and there's creepy castles, and it just gets really, really good. So if anything I've said tantalizes you at all, I really liked it. I thought the acting was great, all the actors were great. I think a cat just came in downstairs and screamed at me and sounded like Gabe, but it's really a cat.
I was going to say, that was very confusing.
Very strange. That was a cat that just yelled at me. But it's on Netflix right now. It's getting rave reviews. It's TVMA, even though I don't know why it's TVMA. It's 5 hours of your time. And so is it five episodes? No, it's 45-minute episodes. So it's about six episodes. And, you know, you start to wonder, like, who is actually the person who's the bad guy here? And there is a twist in the end that I didn't see coming, and that was very shocking and very science fiction, but I don't want to ruin anything. So I'm like, if you like your, like, drama thrillers with a little bit of, like, you know, science fiction, this might be for you. Behind Her Eyes, right now on Netflix.
Listen, you know, one of the services I'm very happy to always be paying for is Netflix. They do bring the heat. I have been running through a lot of different TV shows here and there and trying to finish shows that I didn't finish before. So I might actually check this one out because I need a new program to watch.
Yeah, I feel like next week. So also Netflix has been pulling in stuff like documentaries that have existed in like a year or two, but like had nobody seen them because they hadn't landed on a big platform. And I feel like we might start reviewing some of those too. Like, I just saw The Last Blockbuster, which I think we should talk about next week, which blew me away.
I'll definitely watch that.
It just dropped last week on Netflix. It's been around for like a year or two, but I just don't think it's been anywhere where anyone's really been able to see it. And I loved it, but I want to get your thoughts on that too. So definitely, it's very interesting what's been appearing. Like, you'll see things trending on Netflix and be like, wow, that came out a little while ago. Why is it trending now? Because it just dropped. And if it drops on Netflix, it now exists. I mean, that's where we are.
It's real.
Then it's real. Then it's real. But I think we should talk about Down by Law now so I don't just talk by myself for the next like 30 minutes and I'm losing my voice.
I like this plan.
Go. So I'm tagging you in.
So, you know, we've been talking about for months how like we are going to be in a new golden age of bands releasing albums because what else is anyone going to do during a pandemic? So every so often, a band that, you know, maybe very active, maybe not so active, comes out with a new album. The other week we reviewed the new NoFX record. And then out of nowhere, George is like, you know, there's going to be a new Down by Law record, right? And I was like, what? I was like, it's 2021. What are you talking about? But yes, Down by Law just released a brand new album called Lonely Town. And I gave it a listen. And I got to say, I'm pretty pleased as punch with it. I'm pretty, as far as like Down by Law records go, this is a pretty solid record. It is 13 songs, 38 minutes. It's really all killer, no filler. And especially because they haven't released an album in many years. So this is stuff that I guess they've been brewing on and stewing on, or maybe stuff that they just kind of came up with. But it sounds, you know, for a band that's been around as long as Down by Law, actually really fresh.
Now, for those of you who are very young and don't know who Down by Law is, Down by Law was formed probably in the early 90s by Dave Smalley, who is basically punk rock royalty from the like late 80s hardcore scene. He was in DYS. He was the replacement singer in all. No, was he the first singer of all?
All right, wait, let me tag in real quick here.
Yeah.
Because I was looking into this before because I was like, oh man, we're going to get eaten alive if we don't know. I always thought that all did a record before Dave Smalley. However, I am wrong. In fact, there is on Wikipedia a timeline, like an actual chart timeline, so you know who sang in all when. So Dave Smalley was in all from when they started in 87 to 89. Then you have Scott Reynolds from 90 to what appears to be 93. And then you have Chad Price from 93 to 2002. And then again from 2008 until now, with Milo popping up here and there and filling in between singers.
Yeah, so Dave Smalley is my least favorite singer of all, in all honesty. His vocals are just too good. And I think that's what used to throw me off. It's like Milo had this really good aggressive voice. I guess that's why people did not like any lead singer of all until Milo came back to Descendants. But Dave Smalley is very, very polished, very good singer. And I felt like it worked a lot better with Down by Law. Down by Law was on Epitaph Records. If you are a fan of Epitaph bands like I am, you would probably kind of remember them from. So Down by Law was on all the posters that came out, like when Epitaph would put out their like big ad on the back of the aquarium or whatever punk rock fans at the time, it would be like, you know, Offspring Smash and like Rancid's Let's Go and Pennywise's Unknown Road. And it was always Down by Law's Punk Rock Academy fight song. This was one of the great punk rock albums in 1994. And they had obviously the very popular cover of I Will Walk 500 Miles. 500 Indeed. Miles. They were awesome. I really enjoyed them. I think I found out about Down by Law before I even discovered All and before I discovered Dag Nasty. And, you know, this was up there for me. It was one of my favorite albums next to, you know, the Rancids and the Offspring of the world. But then they like very quickly dropped off the face of the earth. I think they had like one more album after that was kind of popular. There's a song called Gruesome Gary on it that I love. Deep cut there. But other than that, I hadn't heard about them much until I saw Dave Smalley pop up in another band. Don't ask me what their name is, but they opened up for Shelter about 4 or 5 years ago in Brooklyn, and he is very much still active. They were doing a lot of Dag Nasty covers in, you know, within that set, but you know, it was a new band, and you know, I think they're called Don't Sleep. And they have a couple EPs out, but there's a new Down by Law record out, and I'm just like, this is coming out now. This is so weird, and I like it a lot too. I think it's a little bit more aggressive than the stuff they've done in recent years. I think it's definitely more aggressive than the stuff in Awe, but it still has this very pop punk vocals, and you know, from start to finish, I thought this was a really good album too.
You know, one of the things that always caught me about Down by Law was that their symbol, like the first time I saw it, I was like, isn't that the symbol from The Greatest American Hero? But it's upside down. But I think it's a really good album. They were hot for a minute, and then they disappeared in the late 90s. You know, they popped up here and there in the 2000s, in the beginning and at the end of the 2000s. But, you know, you're right. They really kind of felt like a flash in the pan. A very bright flash in the pan for a minute, but nonetheless a flash in the pan. But this album, Lonely Town, I really like it because, you know, you're listening to this album and you're like, you know what? This is kind of, if he took the best, because, you know, Dave Smalley is the only original member of Down by Law. So it's like a Lemonhead situation where it's like Evan Dando and then whoever's behind him. So you've got a guy who is playing songs and some guitar, like he's played in all. And then you've got him doing more Dag Nasty type stuff than what you would consider to be a Down by Law style sound. But then he kind of ties it all together with that Down by Law style sound. So it is kind of like his final form, if you will, where he kind of peppers his Down by Law album with Dag Nasty and then just finishes it off with some All. And it's a really nice blend of tracks. And I think the track listing is good. I think that, you know, lyrically, sonically, he's hitting and firing on all engines. And I'm, again, shocked that I like this album as much as I do. And I'm even more shocked that I'm liking this album as much as I do in 2021.
Yeah, the weird shit I just throw at you. Do you want to know my fondest, weirdest memory of Dave Smalley and Down by Law?
What's that?
I saw them at the Wetlands. I believe it was 1994 or 1995. And I think it was Weston and Doc Copper were opening up. I could be wrong, but I think that was tracks. The lineup. And it is a packed Wetlands. People are nuts. I mean, again, this is the high point of the new era of punk rock, and Down by Law is right up in there. And that song, you know, they were getting a lot of traction on 120 minutes or whatever the hell there was, Alternative Nation at the time. And I just remember him doing a whole set of Down by Law songs, and then he starts doing, for some reason, a set of Black Flag covers. Like, he just starts doing like 3 or 4 Black Flag songs, and I am in the front because I'm trying to photograph this. I'm there with my friends, and the stage at Wetlands, I don't know if anybody remembers it, but it goes halfway up your shin. So it is one of the most brutal stages ever. It's not high enough where you can actually see over, like see the band from the back. It is instead like the floor is kind of tilted inwards. It's almost concaved a little forward, kind of like the Trocadero, and has this like freaking 2-foot, 1-foot stage. And if you're in the front, you are literally getting capped in the shin over and over. So I'm getting crushed. And the moment they start doing Black Flag stuff and people realize it's kind of like a thing they're doing, the crowd crushes forward. Everyone's trying to sing Nervous Breakdown. I don't know the words to it. I'm not a Black Flag fan in 1994.
Nervous Breakdown.
He somehow thinks I should be singing, throws the mic at me, but somehow manages to wrap the cable around my throat. And he's pulling back and the crowd's crushing back on me. And I'm crushing up against him and whatever monitors, trying not to like die. And I'm choking and I'm turning like blue. And I just remember Mike Dolan grabbing the cable like from my neck, like pushing his knee off the PA to try to keep enough slack so I don't die. And that was my fondest memory of Down by Law.
I mean, yeah. I mean, everything you're saying about the Wetlands, dude, like I am having flashbacks. I went to the front of that audience and got in front of the stage one time at Wetlands, and the crowd pushed forward and I can feel it up against my shin. And I immediately had to like kind of limp out of there. Like I was like hoping I could crowd surf out of there because I was like, I could barely walk. Dude, I had a bruise for 2 weeks. That was such an unforgiving stage.
I mean, it was just such a, like, the place was wider than it was longer. So it was like a very wide, like, it would just go, it didn't go back far. The stage to the back wall wasn't very far. It just went wide on one side. And it had this strange, like, step up to get to the stage area. It was just a very strange layout, and it was largely a hippie, I mean, it was the Wetlands Preserve. It was largely a hippie club that, like, hosted a lot of hardcore and punk. I think Rabies was a bouncer there, but, you know, I saw some great legendary punk rock shows there, but it was called the Sweatlands for a reason. There was no air conditioning. There was no ventilation. There was smoking because it was the 90s. And it was just a very oppressive place to see a show. The nice thing was that they had, like, a downstairs bathroom area, so you could escape.
Yeah.
And they had, like, TVs everywhere, so you could see what was going on if you wanted to. The challenge was just, like, just escape. There was nowhere to really get away from a mosh pit. And one of my bigger regrets at shows was, but I don't know, at the time I didn't regret it. I walked out of the leather band that wasn't your band, Leatherface, was that Leathermouth?
Leatherface, yeah. Leatherface. I was in Leathermouth.
Yeah, the legendary one. Not that yours wasn't, but you know what I mean.
It's a different kind of party.
They reunited with Snapcase and were playing, opening up for Avail. It was one of Avail's last shows. I regretted staking around for it because it was one of Avail's last shows. But at the time, I was like, I can't survive Avail in this. I just remember just ready to pass out. It was so bad. And you couldn't get out. You couldn't. There was no reentry at the time because there was smoking allowed. So you, like, were just stuck in a place when you were in there, and you couldn't get out. There's no bracelets. There's no anything like that. And I was like, I got to bail. Like, after two songs in the veil, because I just, like, I can't, like, stand up in here. There's just, like, no move. It's bad, bad.
I am going to bring you and some of the members of our audience back to a very specific time and place with this next statement here. It's going to be a very mentally visual description, because we know downstairs at the Wetlands, they had carpets down there and they had a bunch of different stuff, and it was all kind of like wet all the time. It always felt moist. The way that I always thought that the Wetlands downstairs smelled was as if you took swamp water out of the Jersey swamps and used it to fill your bong and then smoked some skunkweed with it. That's how the downstairs of the Wetlands always smelled.
Yeah, I just remember it being
stunk.
Gross. I don't remember if I've ever pooped there before. Like, I can remember every club I've pooped in, and I don't remember ever pooping in the Wetlands. My whole thing was, if I had a poop, I would try to go as soon as the club opened and try to be first through the door, so I still got it while I was clean. Like the Irving Plaza, if you got there early enough, you still got a pretty good experience. On another note, though.
You mean toilet paper?
Yeah, you got toilet paper. You got toilet paper. Birchill Nightclub, the problem with the Birchill was they had no heat. Unlike other places that didn't have air conditioning, the Birchill didn't have heating. So, and they had those front doors open wide open because I think that's also how they got the gear in. And the bathrooms were right across the front doors. So if you had a poop at the Birchill, it was a decent bathroom, but it was just like subarctic in there. Like your just balls would shrivel up. You couldn't like pee because you just like it was going inside out. It's like going up in you, like gravity reversed. It was just impossible to enjoy yourself while you're trying to poop in there. But you know, it was still one of the cleaner bathrooms at the time. Obviously I've told the Coney Island High story. I've never pooped in CBGBs. But you know, it's the world we live in anyway. So the Wetlands, people, if you never got to go there, you missed out. I think it's now like high end rental apartments or something.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in a touring band, and I can assure you, for how many days you're on tour, weeks you're on tour, you will never have a comfortable shit again. So, you know,
did you ever get to be in a cushy bus?
I did my retirement tour. We did a bus, a 3-week nationwide tour in a bus. It was fantastic, but you can't shit on a bus.
No.
I mean, certain buses are built for shitting, but like 99% of them aren't. So if you got to like take a dump, you got to shit in a bag, or you got to wait till you find a Flying J, whichever comes first.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much output DYS had. DYS started in like 1983, and they produced like, I guess a lot of their stuff was post-reunion. They had a lot of stuff in 2011 and 2012. I thought they had way more albums than they do. They largely had Fire and Ice and DYS and Wolf. God, Fire and Ice was bad, wasn't it? I faintly remember that being a terrible hardcore album. And then he did, yeah, you see, he has a lot of reunion albums. Like Dag Nasty, he was on Can I Say. He wasn't on a wig out at Denko's, but he came back for Four on the Floor in Minority of One, which I fairly remember being good. And obviously the legendary All Roy for President All Roy says, because, you know, we're finishing up a Down by Law review. I highly recommend the new album. You know, definitely if you're looking for something, you know, if you're a punk rock fan, you're looking to branch out because you're new to this game, or if you're like, oh my God, Down by Law still exists. That's crazy. You know, this is what you should be listening to. I highly recommend it.
Me too. 100%.
Did we mention the name of the album's Lonely Town?
It is Lonely Town, and it makes sense. He probably, you know, put it together last year. It was a very lonely town for everybody.
And it was 500 miles. Do you remember what the band sang it?
Originally? The Proclaimers?
The Proclaimers, not the Pretenders, which is what I usually say. But I felt bad. Like, that's what they were known for, but that album had so many good songs. Like, they were no, like, that's the problem where you, when you become famous off, like, when you become famous off of a cover song. And I feel bad for, like, the Alien Ant Farms of the world, people like that, when, like, all you're going to be remembered for, sadly, is the cover song you did instead of, like, you know, other great things.
Hey, man, it's better to get over with the cover song and make some cash and cash out when you can than just fade into obscurity like every other local band. Like, I would, if it was a matter of, like, any band that I was in, it's like, well, you could either, you know, have people listen to your music because they got into you because they heard a cover song, or you can just rot in obscurity and, like, you know, we should get the band back together, man. Every time you go for the night before Thanksgiving, I'll take option A every day and twice on Sunday. I will cover whatever Michael Jackson song you want. Do not give a shit.
Hey, so you know what we got going on right now?
What is that?
We got a surprise caller.
What?
Hold on 1 second. Let's see. Hold on.
Hello.
Hey, is Harvey in the house?
What?
Hey, Harvey.
So we wanted to talk to you. You heard our episode last week. We reviewed Coming to America. We felt like we needed another voice from someone who, you know, probably should have been in Coming to America, because, you know, you are, you know, it's your life story, basically, in a nutshell. And we kind of, you know, we were like longing for having you back on the show, Harvey. You are here now. Give us your quick thoughts on Coming to America.
Okay. One, I was happy to see the majority of the cast, and they brought back a lot of the, you know, the funny stuff that Eddie and Arcidio did. So that stuff was fun. It was okay. It clearly wasn't as good as the first. We'll say that. It felt like they were trying to, you know, there was supposed to be a message and they were getting there. I don't know. 5 minutes into it, I knew what was going on. A minute, and I don't know. Am I allowed to spoil things, or should I?
Okay.
All right. Well, at least we'll say this. In this film, it's obviously, it's Prince Akeem later, and he's got children. They're all daughters. And, you know, his dad eventually will pass away. Who's going to be the heir, all that good stuff. As soon as you see that he's got daughters and he has to have a son, you know what the whole movie is. We know the climate that we're in. We know what eventually is going to happen. So we've got our message. We've got our fun characters that were brought back. So all in all, it was good. I wasn't thrilled with it. It just wasn't a great movie. I think that's just the best way for me to describe it. It was okay.
Go ahead.
Do you think that they really relied heavily on callbacks and cameos to compensate for the fact that they can't tell the kind of jokes that they told when they made the original? Like, I felt as if when they did a lot of the, hey, look, it's this person, it got you to remember why you laughed and thought it was so funny the first time, that they didn't actually have to tell the joke.
I think the reason a lot of the callbacks are in there is because, and I feel bad about saying this, is that they didn't write a great sequel. So what you can do is you can throw stuff in that'll, for people our age who saw the original and loved it, oh, that's funny. And you can kind of get past the fact that the story is kind of all over the place. It kind of doesn't make sense. So the fact that Wesley Snipes is in there, and all these people, all, you know, all these old characters and new characters and stuff that are in there, new black artists that are in there, is good, but the story is not great. So what, that's just harken back to the old days when we were laughing crazy. And, you know, I feel like that's what they did, but they should have taken more time and written a better movie. That's the best I can say.
Well, I'll take it. Do you think there, it is a little bit, I mean, again, this is something I talked about last week, and I don't want to come off as like horribly weird overthinking it, but how come, right. Why do most of my black friends not like this movie and most of my white friends like me do?
Black people don't like it because we were so ready for it. It would be, I mean, we've been talking about a Coming to America sequel for years. When is this going to happen? This is a classic. They got to do it again. When's Eddie coming back? We've been ready for Eddie Murphy to come back and do stand up, to do movies, to do whatever, to get the original Eddie Murphy, leather suit Eddie, you know, delirious Eddie, raw Eddie. You know, we finally get like the sequel that we've been waiting for. And in our minds, it's what we're what's what we're feeling when Black Panther came out. It's going to be fire. We're going to love this movie. And then it comes out and it's okay. It wasn't great. And I don't know if it could have been as great as we hyped it up to be. So we had an expectation. And I don't want to say I speak for all black people, but I would assume that a lot of us expected something better because there wasn't a lot of new funny. There was a lot of old funny.
I think I get that. And I guess for me, you know, obviously, look, I don't want to speak. I mean, obviously, from a place of like white privilege, like I'm not one to talk about movies made for white people versus movies made for black people. But Coming to America was obviously a very cultural moment for black cinema. And I guess I get that. If that was such an important film for the time, for the culture, for everything, and then have it be like, I could see that. I could see if you're waiting 30 years and you're actually waiting 30 years for a sequel, not like us who are like, whatever, yeah. Coming to America's out. I can't wait to laugh at like Eddie Murphy jokes today. I get it. It actually makes a lot of sense.
Now, Harvey, do you think
go ahead.
That after seeing something like Dolomite Is My Name, which, you know, came out before Coming to America 2, like I initially thought, you know, to kind of, I guess maybe piggyback a little bit on what you were saying is that like, I thought he was coming back. And when they were like, yo, Coming America 2 is coming out, after seeing Dolomite Is My Name, I was like, okay, we're getting Eddie Murphy back.
Because Dolomite Is My Name is fantastic. I enjoyed that movie so much. I thought that was, it was, to me, it was a good film because it, you know, it gave good, aside from the funny and Eddie Murphy being Eddie, but Rudy Ray Moore is such an iconic person in black culture. So to tell that story and to have somebody who kind of followed in his footsteps play the part and tell the story, it was excellent. But Eddie Murphy was essentially playing himself or playing Akeem in this movie. So it's a different vibe. There's, to me, I'm watching it, I'm enjoying it. You got the dads in it. It felt like there was like three or four different messages. Oh, this is female empowerment. Then we've got the whole thing about it being a black man in this world. And I thought that's the mistake that they made because they had, I won't get too deep into it, but you have a scene where Akeem is talking with Lisa's dad and he's talking about how hard it is to be king and father and husband and all these things. And had they ran with that, I think that would have been better because you can superimpose the struggle for black women because obviously you knew where that was going with who would eventually run the thing versus the struggle of being a black man. But they didn't do that. That was a drop in the bucket. And then they went back to trying to be funny. So it's my thing is that it was funny, but I feel like they could have been funny, but they really could have made more of a social impact in the film. That's why I think I was disappointed in it because I saw potential and they didn't run with it. They did something for a second and they just kept it moving.
No, oh, that makes sense. I we talked about earlier today, it was my Friday night movie. I was looking for a brainless dumb movie, not a movie I've been waiting for 30 years. I was so excited for, I was like, I need a good movie today. I also saw it right after watching Coming to America. We watched it the night before because Allison's a little bit younger. I don't know if she remembered Coming to America. Mm-hmm. And right. I gotta say, I actually enjoyed having watching them back to back. I enjoyed Coming to America too, more than Coming to America just on straight haha funny, because I found the first movie, I just forgot how jarring that ending was, where they went from like one scene where she's like abandoning him at like the subway, and the next scene she's like magically been teleported to his country and is marrying him, and I'm like, wow, that is a weird blowing the final act.
Agreed. The problem, you know what it is? I mean, a real issue aside from the film is its relevancy really, really depends on just how old you are. our age, we remember that. We remember laughing at the barbershop thing about Arsenio being the pastor. All that stuff is great. That stuff. So when you see it again, it's funny because, oh, I remember that speech and all that. But it wasn't nearly as funny this time. It wasn't as funny to me because it wasn't new. It was just they were rehashing it. That's why I said they didn't. It wasn't new funny. It was just almost recycled funny to me. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I would laugh, but I think the first one to me is far better. Far better.
I agree. And I thank you for coming on and share your thoughts. We're going to have to bring you back in a couple weeks to do our WrestleMania Road to WrestleMania episode. Are you caught up on wrestling?
I am, especially when there's a large black man who looks a lot like me as the champ. You can't go wrong with Lashley. So, of course, I don't think, oh, I can tell. Oh, we'll definitely talk about that. But we better hurry up because he's probably not going to be champ much longer.
Well, they announced it's him versus Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania. But, you know, like if you're going to put a very large black man that looks kind of like you, but not really, I would rather the belt be on Keith Lee, not on Bobby Lashley.
I know. Oh, we have so much to talk about. That makes me.
We will save that for either next week or the week afterwards. We definitely got, or maybe right after the pay-per-view. So probably right after whatever the roadblock or whatever it is. Thank you very much. I'll plug your podcast.
Oh, Love is Black podcast. Me and the wife talking about love in the culture. This season is all couples. We've had all couples come on, tell us about how they met, how they've gotten together, their lives, the struggles, the ins and outs within the black culture. So it's been a great season. I've had a family come on and just new people that I've met. So it's been fantastic. If you want to hear about love, Love is Black podcast, we're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us where you find all your podcasts. Thanks.
I just hung up on him mid-conversation. Sorry about that, Harvey. Always good to have him on. We'll definitely have a wrestling one. We may even need to bring back Don Becker for that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we might.
Back in the saddle again.
Yeah, I think I could do that, too. I think now we were set up to actually do multiple callers. But hopefully very soon we will be back live in the basement. So excited.
Let's not tease everybody, George. Let's get the job done first, and then we're going to do it.
To be fair, I've already got my one vaccine, and I have the other one scheduled. That's a lot more. You know me, I don't wait till it's in the can, but it's scheduled. So unless like there's a massive shortage on second vaccines, they're good. Sadly, I was hoping there could be a WrestleMania thing, but it is. They really schedule it like 4 weeks out. So it's right at the tail end of the 4 weeks. But something to be excited about. Something I'm excited about. I've been doing so much talking. Next week, you're watching more stuff.
I will.
I need to talk less. I've been playing, and Control came out 2 years ago. It's the game of the year of 2019. It is the strangest game I've ever played. I can't even explain it, but I'm going to get to that a little bit. This is a review of the Ultimate Edition that's come out for PS5. So they released an Ultimate Edition that kind of like is the edition with all the DLCs and whatnot bundled into it, as many game developers are apt to do. But this one allowed you to have an instant upgrade to the PS5. And having owned a PS5, I got to tell you, it is a hell of an upgrade. I started playing this game on PS4. Then I realized that the saves weren't going to continue to PS5. They weren't going to flip over directly because supposedly...
Ugh, no way, it sucks.
Yeah, supposedly the game is so different in the design and the build-out. They couldn't make the saves match. So I stopped playing and I started picking it back up again when it relaunched. It was also the free game, I believe, last month. But I've started playing this game in the last like month. I've been playing it very regularly. And its main premise, and I don't even know how to explain this, but... You're a woman who's drawn to this location in New York. It's kind of an invisible building. It's there, but it's not there. It's called the Oldest House, and it's a federal bureau of like investigations, but it's of paranormal investigations. And you are basically, you find this place that you know existed. You have voices in your head that led you there. You go inside and you're like, oh my God, this is strange. Then you've realized that this building and this organization, this government, this clandestine government organization has been infiltrated by this evil paranormal group calling themselves the Hiss. Kind of like, not like the Hiss tanks from G.I. Joe, but like just this evil presence that has possessed many of the agents of this organization. And you need to work your way. And it's also like, evolved this building. It's basically taken over the building, you know, kind of like in Ghostbusters where the demons, or Inferno is a good example. If you've read the old X-Men comics, you know, basically when the demons come from hell, they've, you know, kind of like transmorphed the buildings into like hellacious hellscapes, right? Like they become
Inferno. Yeah, right. 100%. Right.
Well, this is similar, except they're not quite like creepy evil. They're more just like very strange, like very, you know, those puzzles where you don't know, not even puzzles, but like the images where you don't know which way is up. There's an artist who does, I don't remember, but you don't know which way is up. The steps go up, the steps go down. You know which way you go. The whole gameplay is like that. There are tunnels that like twist and you basically have to work your way through killing the bad guys, solving the story. And you, like pretty much very quickly into it, you find a dead body. He's got a gun next to him. You pick up the gun and it's like he who holds the gun is now the director of the bureau. And like, you're like, what the fuck? And it's like, well, it's like Thor's hammer. And you basically go through and everywhere there's like tape recordings and redacted statements. And you slowly build out this mythology of this paranormal investigation and this kind of like demonic possession of this building called the Oldest House. It, like, if you just step back and think about it, you're like, this is the best X-Files episode I've ever, never seen.
That sounds awesome.
And it's right up your alley. It is a little horror based, and like, you know, there's a lot of surround sound noises, like just weird voices talking, but it's not really a horror game. Nothing here is really scary. It's just, it's definitely more science fiction. It's definitely weird. And they put you into a story where you will not understand the story when you play. The more you scratch the surface, the more you uncover, the more the story makes sense. What's very odd for me is I've never played this game, but there is a game called Alan Wake. Do you remember the game Alan Wake?
I do, yeah.
From 10 years ago. A big reveal in this that I was not expecting is halfway through the game, you find out this game is a sequel to Alan Wake, but they never say it. They, like, it's not something, you don't need to know Alan Wake. And one of the DLCs is like, you know, you solve what happened to Alan Wake, but I've never played it. I don't feel like I need to, but I kind of want to now, but it is a secret sequel to it. And again, you don't realize until you discover some files, and you're like, oh my God, this is a sequel to Alan Wake. If you've ever played Alan Wake, you will, I guess, like this game. It is really, really odd. Like the weapons you have unlimited bullets, which is great.
Love that.
You use power to like get more bullets. You basically got to pause for a second and like they get more bullets. You can find weird things that make you mod your guns so they become cooler guns. You can levitate. You can teleport. You can like do this ramming thing. You get powers. Like imagine like people like getting so powerful that you can just like levitate bad guys, crush them, and just like then fire a gun at them. It's such a crazy, weird game, and it all takes place in an office building with normal cubicles and like normal filing cabinets, and everything in the game is you can break it, like you can damage pretty much everything. So remember that game State of Emergency? Yep. That old Rockstar game that was really shitty, but you could damage anything. It's like that. I won't spoil anything, but eventually you find out your brother has also been kidnapped by them. There is so the story really, really gets deep, and it's a whole family. You try to find out who your voice is in your head. But my favorite part of this game is that you find out that there are these objects. There's objects of like mass destruction, but they're basically normal things, normal everyday things, like a refrigerator, a pink flamingo, a clock, and they're possessed and they have powers. And this is where you store that shit. So it's kind of like Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom type stuff. You know, the warehouse where they keep all the shit.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yep. This is it. Like, this is the place. If it was in modern times, it's like, this is where they store and try to find out why that pink flamingo kills people at night.
You know, if I wasn't actually playing a video game currently, I would probably pick this up and play it.
I've been trying to push this on George, so our friend George, so much, because I'm like, I think this would be right up his alley. It is, and I think he has it because it was free on PlayStation Plus. But yeah, so you like a good chunk of this game is like the side missions are you know these hiss creatures have opened up all the doors, so all the paranormal devices have made their way out into the building, and you have to track them down. And it's just like, there's a stoplight, there's a traffic light.
Is it still free?
It's a possessed traffic light. and you, it like basically like it's a boss battle, and this traffic light, like if it turns red, you have, if you're not frozen or still, it'll start you back at the beginning of the mission, and then you have to like keep walking while it's green, slow down now it's yellow, and stuff like that are like the cool puzzles you have to solve in there. So very, very interesting blend of horror, puzzle, mystery. It is amazing. On PlayStation 5, the ray tracing looks great, loads in seconds, and includes all the DLC. So again, I'm reviewing a two-year-old game here, but it is basically new to PlayStation 5 people, and it was free recently. You can definitely get it cheap. I highly recommend Control. You love X-Files, you love weird stuff, you like your horror with a tinge of like tinge of sci-fi to it, this is it. This is one of the best games I've played. So I highly recommend it. This is Control Ultimate Edition, and that is an episode of My Tie Happy Hour.
Another one in the books. And next week, we're going to talk about some really fun stuff, including we're going to watch the Schneider Cut.
Oh, Jesus, I forgot about that. I forgot it's next week.
It comes out when this episode drops on Thursday. Thursday night, we will be watching the Snyder Cut.
The early review. So yesterday got screened for reporters at a movie theater. I talked to a few who were like, I don't know if I want. Like, I have some friends who have already been vaccinated. Like, oh, this is weird. But they did do a screening. I guess it would be Monday night. And the reviews are really good. The thing that throw me with the reviews, the pre-reviews, are like everybody's like, this was amazing. It like, you know, it was like as good as like I loved Batman versus Superman. I'm like, oh, record scratch. And I'm like, you love Batman versus Superman? Like, is this really good? So we're got to wait. It does sound like it is a completely different movie. And I'm going to rely on you, John, to tell me, to fill in those blanks and tell me like how much of it is different.
Well, I will tell you real quick ahead of next week, seeing the final trailer for this movie, it looks like a completely different movie. Like, you know, in any kind of article that you read, they're going to talk about, you know, the changes that they made and this and that and how they really gutted the thing for all the Whedon bullshit that they added in there. It looks like it was not hyperbole because, holy crap, it looks like a completely different movie. There's things that happened in this last trailer that actually got me to pop, and I'm like, where the fuck was that when they initially released this movie? Holy shit, this actually might be good. I mean, 4 hours it's an ask, but I'm going into it with a completely open mind, and I will tell you everything that's different next week on My Tie Happy Hour.
Hey, look, you can pee. It's your house. It's 4 hours. We just watched Endgame again. Feels like an hour. I don't know if this is going to feel as good, but, you know, I'm excited for it. You know what else we have next week?
What else?
Winter Soldier.
Oh, I know.
Falcon. We got the early review of that. The early thoughts on that. You know,
we're also going to talk about DuckTales, the series finale.
Yeah, I got to binge a lot though, but that might be the week afterwards. I think I need to binge hard.
That works too.
I gotta. So Gabe's got. We got this problem right now where Gabe is demanding Muppet. Oh my God! So did we talk about last week? Did we talk about the commercial that's like ruined my son?
No.
Okay, we'll do really quickly because we're not that far late, but. There is a commercial on Nickelodeon Jr. that is like this, and if you're ever watching shows with Amelie, like you'll see it. It is a bunny or a bear or something, and it's been burned. And like the mother comes, the child comes and goes, something's wrong with bunny or bear, I don't know what it is. And its head falls off. And the mommy takes
it. Oh, no.
Like, there's no helping anymore. We'll throw in the watch and see what happens. And like, it doesn't matter what the rest of this commercial is, because those 2-3 seconds at the beginning when you see this bear, this lovable bear that's been burned and the head falls off.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. It is the most, like, it threw me. Like, I didn't even know he was terrified of it. I saw it and I was like, oh, this is really bad. Like, who do I complain to as a parent? And he saw it and it destroyed him. He broke. My child broke. And then the next time it came on, he ran up to me and just cried in hysterics and told me to turn off commercials. So I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize how bad it hit him until that weekend. He went to his aunt's house, my sister's, she was moving, and they went to help, and he had a great time. He was unpacking. He was wonderful. And then he went to the other room, and as he walked into the other room, a commercial came on TV, and he demanded he leave. He's like, go now, go home now.
And my mom made you leave.
And my mom, no, I wasn't there. My mom was like, I don't understand. Like, we didn't know what happened. There was just this commercial with the with this burnt bear. And I'm like, oh my God, that was it. That's it. And he will not allow us to watch TV anymore. We have to only watch on demand because he knows there's no commercials. And he's only been watching Muppet Babies. Muppet Babies and Chippendale Rescue Rangers is all he'll watch.
Listen, man, he's a little kid haunted. Like, haunted. Legitimately haunted.
I gotta find this commercial so I can play it for you, like, as a segment, because you will, like, lose your shit. It is, like, dark as fuck. And I just don't understand.
You should tweet at the director of that and be like, shame.
I know, but I gotta watch it to find it again. And the problem is he won't let me watch TV. Like, he won't watch commercials. Like, you can't even talk about commercials. If you mention commercials, he'd be like, no talk. Quiet, no talk. He's so upset about this commercial. So,
poor little guy.
Anyway, great episode once again. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much, John. Soon, maybe we'll be back together. In the meantime, Hopefully. How can the kids reach you?
So, I've changed all my social media handles to @JohnMaguireRPG, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at that handle. I tweet about board games. I tweet about cute animals. I tweet about Dungeons & Dragons and other RPGs. And you can follow my day-to-day adventures in podcasting and in life over on Instagram at @JohnMaguireRPG. George, where can the people find you?
You can reach me on GLK Creative on the Instagram and Twitter. You can reach me at cultofgeorge.com. We have an Instagram called My Thai Happy Hour. How shockingly inventive. You can check out all our photos of Tiki. More Tiki. And we also, our entire archive is at mytitv.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Let us know what you want to hear. Let us know if there's something we've missed that maybe we should watch. Like, hey, tell us if we should watch Lapsus. I'll watch it. Anyway, that's been another great adventure in the world of Mai Tai. Take us out.
Everybody remember, be nice. Socially distance yourself. Wear a mask. Get vaccinated. Aloha. Aloha.